Started your program already. Again, this is the last presentation, patient safety, and the presentation is CAPS in the practice of evidence-based prophylaxis reported among three patient groups at increased risk for deep vein thromboses and pulmonary embolism demonstrate the need for expanded use of technologies that would promote physician education and patient safety in hospitals. Sounds like a very important topic, a very major issue of mortality and morbidity in hospitals. The presenter is Alan Rounstein. He has a long resume. I'll try to read it quickly. Not really that quickly. Is the Mr. Rounstein, MPH, is a chief executive officer at the National Blood Clot Alliance, a national patient advocacy organization with an emphasis on education programs for patients and families, health professionals, and the general public, directed at preventing blood clots and reducing morbidity and mortality associated with deep vein thromboses and pulmonary embolism. For 30 years, Mr. Brownstein has combined his business/strategic planning skills and expertise in public health programs and policy to provide leadership in developing and growing health organizations and shaping health policy/regulation in the U.S. Prior to NBCA, Brownstein held the position of president and CEO of the American Liver Foundation and as the CEO of the National Hemophilia Foundation. Brownstein has also held executive positions as the head of the National Trade Association, Hospital Administrator, Registered Lobbyist, and State Official in Health Planning Regulation. Mr. Brownstein has a number of scientific articles in health policy management and scientific publications, and has presented testimony before congressional committees, regulatory agencies, and state and local legislative bodies. Mr. Brownstein has served on a number of national boards. He has a master's in public health degree from the University of Michigan. And here's Mr. Brownstein.
Thank you very much. I would like to start with disclosure that the survey we conducted upon which this presentation is based was funded to the National Blood Clot Alliance from Janssen Pharmaceuticals. My presentation today will focus on three areas related to reducing deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism. The first area is sharing with you the data from our national awareness survey of 1,750 patients across America. And it's a survey of their awareness of DVT and PE. The second area is to focus on the gaps that we learned from the survey, the gaps in optimal care in preventing DVT and PE. And the third area will be to discuss opportunities to close these gaps with the use of technology so that we see this as basically as a winnable public health activity that this kind of intervention would offer us. The National Blood Clot Alliance is a volunteer-based, patient-led advocacy organization, and we are dedicated to the prevention and quality treatment of blood clots and clotting disorders. Our governing board is made up of people who are directly affected by blood clots and clotting disorders. While we are patient-led, we are science-driven with the prestigious Medical and Scientific Advisory Board. The inspiration of this survey was based on the call to action that was issued by the U.S. Surgeon General to prevent deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism. And this is a report that came out in September of 2008. This report spotlights the public health urgency of preventing DVT and PE. It sets forth specific recommendations for diagnosis, prevention, and treatment, and suggests specific criteria for research, education, and public policy. The strategic imperative is basically to close the gaps in the application and awareness of evidence-based interventions. The Surgeon General's report reported that there are 600,000 Americans who have blood clots every year, with 100,000 deaths each year. A study at the Mayo Clinic says that number is even higher, that there are 900,000 blood clots every year, with up to 300,000 deaths, which makes this a major public health burden in the United States. I would, at this point, now that, you know, looking at the data and the large numbers, I want to reduce this to highlighting a specific example about Sharon. And I learned about Sharon in an email that I received from her just last week. Recently, Sharon, who was from Northern Virginia, went to a highly regarded D.C. area hospital for major abdominal surgery. And she, this is a woman, a very young woman. And after discharge, she was progressing as expected. And then suddenly, 2 weeks later, she woke up in severe pain, feeling like she had shards of glass in her lungs. This is her description. Her husband took her to the ER, where she was treated for indigestion. So, and this was later diagnosed correctly as a pulmonary embolism.
Same,
you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was the same hospital. Now, since then, Sharon's whole life has changed, living with medication and pain. But she considers herself one of the lucky ones because she is alive. The bad news is that Sharon's story is repeated in hospitals across America all the time. The good news is that we have the medical capability to manage anticoagulation effectively and the potential of using technologies to make this really a winnable public health battle. The challenge is to connect the dots, ensuring that healthcare professionals in hospitals and patients understand that the use of blood thinners needs to be an integral part of most hospitals' days. This challenge and this paper are dedicated to Sharon and the thousands of other hospital patients who have preventable blood clots that occur every month. The, the perspectives, the public health perspectives of what blood clots mean in hospitals is that basically there's a tenfold increase risk among acutely ill hospital patients. And this is broken down to as much as 40% increase among patients who are for surgery, general surgery, and medical admissions. For more complex orthopedic procedures such as total hip and knee replacements, that is as up to 60%. Also, this is 1 in 10 hospital deaths are related to pulmonary embolism. So this is not a trivial area. This is a major area for concern. In response to the Surgeon General's call to action, we conducted this survey. And we conducted it so that we could benchmark awareness and prophylaxis experiences as reported by patients. And this survey is one of the most comprehensive of its kind in this area. As I mentioned, we have the number of patients include 500 from the general public, 250 patients who received total hip knee replacements, 500 oncology patients, and 500 hospitalized patients. These other areas represent other parts of the study that I'm not going to share with you today, but as I said, the focus of this study was to look at awareness, and awareness by as measured by the information that these patients had, their prophylaxis experiences, as well as adherence. The admissions are reflected. We have 43% surgical, 32% medical, 11% trauma, 6% childbirth, and 21% other. The length of stay is 12% of greater than 10 days, 37% 5 to 10 days, and 51% 3 to 4 days. Now that's, you know, higher than usual in any distribution, and you need to know that in screening the participants in this survey, for the hospital admissions, they had to be in inpatients for three or more days. So that's why it's so high. That was how we screened the admissions. Now, what we found is that that awareness of DVT, knowledge of DVT, was at 28%. Awareness of PE was 15%. Interesting that it's so low, and yet 43% reported family history of blood clots, and 15% reported that they had histories of blood clots. And what's really disappointing is that almost half reported that there was no communication with physicians or other healthcare professionals about the risk of blood clots. I will also say that it is interesting that 83%, while they didn't know what DVT or PE was all about, 83% reported that they understood what a blood clot was all about. They were able to define that. And what's even more important from a public health perspective and health education and perspective is that 99% of the 83% understood that a blood clot was a potentially life-threatening event. So that, you know, offers the opportunity for the saliency of that, offers some real opportunities here. The patients also reported their prophylaxis, less than one-third anticoagulation pill, less than one-third anticoagulant injection. A lot of patients, 37%, reported aspirin. Bzzz, wrong. That's not what you should be provided. And you see the amount of mechanical approaches through compression stockings and mechanical compression and ambulation. But that shows that there is really less than optimal care. It's also kind of interesting that those who claim that they knew what a DVT was all about, there was a lot of them could not identify actual symptoms, signs of symptoms of a DVT. And what's really kind of interesting is that those that were most at risk, and the hospitalized patients and the cancer patients contrasted with the general public, they knew even less. So you would think that there would be a greater understanding there. And here too, with respect to PE, with respect to pulmonary embolism signs and symptoms, it's even less. So that again shows the level of patient understanding here. The additional findings show that 46% said that they were not informed or educated by healthcare professionals about the potential of a DVT due to hospitalization. 57% said that they were not informed about what could happen if a blood clot forms. And 50% said that neither doctor nor healthcare professional talked about ways in which a blood clot could be prevented. Now, there are understandable obstacles that exist to DVT-PE prevention in a hospital setting. First of all, rarely is a DVT or a PE a primary cause for admission. So this is often a complication of something else, most often, rather than the reason for the admission. It's not related to the interest or the specialization or subspecialty of the admitting physician. So, if an orthopedic surgeon is doing hip and knee replacement or an oncologist treating a cancer patient, you know, their focus is on another area. So that represents another problem, and probably one of the most difficult problems is that it happens after discharge. You have a blood clot, most often it occurs after discharge. So how do you capture that? So here we believe that technology offers an opportunity to close these gaps in practice and in patient learning. So computerized reminders or alerts to improve adherence by doctors and to prevent potential DVT due to hospitalization, that offers great opportunities. Another opportunity is opting out of DVT prophylaxis as the rule should be considered instead of opting in, so that if you're being admitted into the hospital, you're going to be given blood thinners unless they are otherwise contraindicated. And then also the use of interactive technology for patient learning that optimizes patient adherence and self-advocacy. So in the UK, our counterpart organization in the UK gives out buttons. When patients enter a hospital, there's a button that says, tell me about blood thinners. You know, so maybe we ought to be doing that there so that patients can speak for themselves as well. So we need to triangulate this problem with patients as well as healthcare professionals and policymakers. So here we have future directions for patient safety. We have, we can improve patient awareness by using simplified terms. So if we talk about blood clots instead of DVT and PE, we might be able to gain some more traction there. Information that is also true, where we could fill gaps in what treaters know, what healthcare professionals know about the risks, and that patients know about the risks, as well as the treatment options that are available. Prophylaxis guidelines exist. They are there. And we need to optimize the use of these evidence-based prophylaxis guidelines. It's not like they're not there. Adherence is also critical, and here again, we could use electronic medical records, electronic order sets, and computerized reminders. So the imperative here for patient safety is to improve DVT and PE awareness and prophylaxis with patients and healthcare professionals. That will result in reduced risks and reduced complications, and it will result in decreased morbidity, mortality, and healthcare costs. We need to expand implementation of electronic medical records and communications, and again, standardize order sets and increase adherence to maximize safety. Those are the take-home messages. There are leadership efforts that we are acknowledging and need to continue, and that is, CMS and Health and Human Services is prioritizing DVT, PE risks, and the CDC Division of Blood Disorders is developing surveillance and awareness programs, which is great. Information about the significant gaps does exist. And that the National Blood Clot Alliance, we have formulated a hospital quality improvement resolution that I'll close with. Prophylaxis remains suboptimal, and what we need is hospitals can provide multidisciplinary institutional support for prophylaxis. And I think that Olivia's presentation really shows how that could be really effective. And we do have concrete evidence. UCSD in San Diego has a comprehensive hospital program, as in other areas that I just, time does not permit for me to deal with. But within a couple of months of implementing a hospital-wide plan with effective communications, they reduced DVTs in that hospital within a couple of months of implementation by 39%, and that's the reported data. I know informally from Dr. Greg Maynard that has increased well into the 40% and is improving steadily. Adherence against and encouraging patient involvement. In summary, simply put, 70%. Of DVTs and PEs in the country are hospital acquired. Simply put, DVT is the most common preventable cause of hospital death. Simply put, DVT is the number one ranked patient safety strategy for hospitalized patients. And also, there is the weight of scientific evidence. It points to DVT PE as being clinically important with respect to morbidity, mortality, and cost, as I shared with you. Also, the weight of evidence supports prophylaxis to reduce DVT PE risk with respect to morbidity, mortality, and costs. And also, the weight of evidence demonstrates that correct prophylaxis rarely leads to important complications, including bleeding. In six words, I take from William Geertz, this whole problem can be resolved. The first two words give prophylaxis. The second two words, mostly anticoagulant. And the last two words, long enough. So let's really focus on what we need to focus on. I will close in describing to you that we have a quality improvement resolution that was just passed last month. That calls for patients, the general public, healthcare professionals, and policymakers to be informed of preventable hospital DVT risk. Second is that patients entering hospitals should be armed with the information they need to know about the DVT PE risk. Third is that hospital institutional support of DVT prophylaxis is essential, and that technology is central to making this occur, given the complexity that exists here. And this is well documented that when this is done, it works. So this is not just me talking up here about this data. We know that there is scientific support for this. We call for CMS and the VA and private third parties to reward optimal care, as well as to penalize substandard DVT prophylaxis, and that this needs to be benchmarked and needs to be monitored. And now, given that this is Halloween, I want to close by saying not trick or treat. I'm saying that what we stand for is treat or trick. And we could make a difference in stopping blood clots considering how we move forward. I want to thank the members of the steering committee that designed the survey that was conducted, and as well as the production company that helped in producing these slides, and also DVDs that are available on a whole array of study of reports that we've issued on this. So you could go to our website or to the downloadable APHA, and thank you very much. So I'd be glad to entertain any questions. Yes? Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes. When people go to a hospital, pre-admission, it's determined whether or not someone needs to be prophylaxed. I'm suggesting that we need to consider that automatically people are prophylaxed.
Okay.
And that... And then that he would have to opt out if it was contraindicated, so that would improve patient safety. So I went over that too quickly.
The other thing I was wondering, you mentioned sequential pressure stockings. What do you find to be their role? So even if you're giving subcutaneous heparin, is sequential compression mechanical stocking play a role?
Yes, they are helpful. I don't have the data available right now. But most important is the use of anticoagulants as being most effective. But certainly these other methods to prevent blood clots are very helpful.
But not sequential compression stockings in place of?
No, not in place of. Yes?
Is there anything in the survey results that surprised you?
Yes. Actually, it was actually in a totally different area that from this. When we looked at patients with atrial fibrillation, and we're seeking to learn more about this, we found that they were much more informed than we expected them to be. So we're trying to get the lessons from that. But there's still significant gaps, and significant gaps in how they're being prophylaxed and that sort of thing. But a major difference. So that did surprise us. So yes, okay. Again, thank you very much.